Srila Prabhupada ki
yeah.
Jai, Bhakti Vedanta ki
yeah.
Rantaraj, Shima, Bhagavatam ki
yeah.
Giriraj, Maharaj ki
Joy ni doi gopri moro ki
So what did we discuss last night? We're now Bhakti Vedanta class.
The analysis of devotees, how they should be environmentally conscious.
Any other points?
We discussed how it is demonious to destroy the environment and how we need to destroy everything.
Any other points?
Regarding the inoculation, I've asked Nirmala, what did she do for Abhishek and Sweta? She said that we gave only polio and BCG. The rest of the vaccines were not given. Because there was, even at that time, when we were not inclined to give, there was a lot of resistance because we know many doctors in Hyderabad. And all of them, they said, that don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. So finally we settled okay, polio and BCG, but other vaccines were not.
Just on that point, when we were trying to get Rita vaccinated, we consulted with Dr. Panaswamy, and Panaswamy mentioned that, look, if the body is going to be used for the service of Krishna, and if we are going to have any of these vaccinations, then there's no harm. And this is what these instructions were. So on that basis, we actually went ahead and did that.
Yes, just as long as people understand there are alternatives.
Yes.
Okay. When we used to eat food in India, when we used to go naturally, I can remember, when the food started coming from America, they have wheat, red wheat, and that was grown in pesticide and all the things. After that, the disease started coming. And all over the India, they used to supply the milk, they used to supply the wheat, free to the people, all the poor country. All these polio, all the problems, before there was no only there was no other disease, all these diseases start coming after you start eating the pesticide. And start eating them like a leaf. I remember that.
Good point. Any other points? So Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing that the demoniac mentality, demoniac consciousness, is to destroy the environment and to destroy the natural resources of the earth. Now, the natural resources of the earth are those things which are in the mode of goodness, such as fruits, flowers, okay, trees which produce valuable things for human society, minerals, okay, vegetables, grains, milk products, all these things are considered to be auspicious. And the demoniac mentality is to destroy these things, or to try to somehow or other ruin the natural opulence of society. So tonight we'll continue and we'll hear how Hiranyakashipu begins to preach transcendental knowledge to his relatives to pacify them after the death of his brother Hiranyaksha. He actually gives very enlightening instructions. Hiranyakashipu is extremely learned. But he's, ultimately he's demoniac, so everything is ruined. Any other points?
There was a small thing, swine flu going on in 4 or 5 years ago. And I went to India, I had the flu. And my temperature was not coming down. I went to take many medicines. I was on the Ramdev, you know, there's one thing called globe. He said, Goa is a globe, and the globe will go. And the no temple, we will not have any temple. I am eating that globe. I have brought the plant here and there. For 6 years I never had temple. And I give it to my children all the time. I never paid the Panadol or Paracetamol to get it.
What's it called, sir?
Globe. I'll give you the plant. I got it.
Okay, plant.
It's a creeper.
Okay. What's it called?
Creeper is a globe.
Grow.
Glow. G-E-L-O.
Glow.
G-L-O.
Glow.
Yeah, it's a plant. And it's like a creeper. So, if you eat that one, you will never have a temperature. I do take continuously.
Does it have any other name?
They might have some name. But I got it as some other day. We pretend to. I got Matthew plants, you know. You cut it down these days and put it in your backyard and it's good.
Okay. Hey, give me some.
Yes.
Okay. Prabhupada, I heard you say recently also, if you eat 2 neem leaves every day,
yeah,
you will not get sick. 2 neem leaves.
You eat
the
tulsi leaves, you don't get cancer.
Yeah, I've heard that also. So. But that also depends on your intestines being clean.
Mm.
You have to remove the palm and those. You have to live healthily. If you don't live properly, then even if you take medicines, it won't have effects. So.
I had asthma. I had diabetes. Since I'm doing this one, my asthma is gone.
Mm.
From the last 5-6 years, I don't take any inhaler or anything.
Make sure you give me some of this.
So, asthma, I have done some yoga, I take turmeric and amla and black pepper in water every day. So then we do many things, you know. I was so sick all the time. I was watering this problem and that problem. I usually think if I go to the one, if I take sannyas, you know how I was living. No, I'm so sick, I have to carry inhalers. I don't have any disease.
Make sure you give me all these.
Yeah.
Okay.
You give them that glass.
What's that?
You give them that glass.
No. I'll try them first. If it works at all. So let's continue. Okay. Are you with us, Sydney? Sydney, are you there? Sherry Mookie, can you hear us? No sound. Sydney? Are you there, Sydney? Speaker? Incoming call. Just press that one.
Yes, for a green one.
That's what I'm doing.
Select.
Can you hear us, Sydney? Okay. Okay, it is us only. Okay, we're about to begin, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so let us begin. Text number, tonight we'll go from text 20 to 31. Okay. Just a small note, everyone's going a little bit late again, so try to be on time. Hiranyakashipu said, "My dear mother, sister-in-law, and nephews, you should not lament the death of the great hero, for a hero's death in front of his enemy is glorious and desirable." So what do you learn from this verse?
He thinks his brother is a great hero.
Yeah, his brother is a great hero. Yeah, but he's a great hero.
He died on the battlefield. That's a great hero.
This is the general instruction to you. Do not quit the battle. Not in the fight, because the duty of a Kshatriya is to land the battlefield. It's better to land the battlefield than run out.
So you know, in Prabhupada's pastimes in 1976, I think it was, Prabhupada was not feeling well. Prabhupada was very old, he was 80 years old, he wasn't feeling well. He was traveling, he was in that 13-story skyscraper in Manhattan, and the devotees were trying to get Prabhupada to rest because he was about to go from New York to London on the plane. And he wasn't well, he wasn't feeling well. And they wanted him to go to New Vrindavan and rest for some time. So the sannyasis, Prabhupada got into the elevator and he was going down to the ground floor to get out to get into the taxi to go to the airport. So the sannyasis, they got into the elevator with him, and they were trying to persuade him to not go to London, to just rest. And then when the door, they got to the ground and the doors opened, Prabhupada turned around and said to everyone, he said, "I just want the benediction to die fighting on the battlefield for Krishna like Arjuna until my last breath." And then he just walked out and got into the car and went to the airport. And everyone was just shocked. So this is the attitude of a devotee. We should also have this attitude. We should die on the battlefield for Krishna. My dear mother, in a restaurant or place for drinking cold water, many travelers are brought together, and after drinking water, they continue to their respective destinations. Similarly, living entities join together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they are led apart to their destinations. So we'll read the purport. All the, you see all the globes around the room, they're starting to go out. It's becoming very dull. So by next week, if anyone wants to do some seva and get some gloves and fix them, okay. Okay, so we'll read the report. Mahamaji, can you please read?
The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of the activities, which are inexorably carried out by nature. 3.2. All living entities act exactly according to directions of the frequency. Material nature, because in the material world we are fully under a higher control. All the living entities in this material world have come here only because they wanted to be equal to Krishna in enjoyment, and have thus been sent here reconditioned by material nature in different degrees. In the material world, a so-called family is a combination of several persons in one home, to fulfill the terms of their imprisonment. As criminal prisoners scatter as soon as their terms are over and they are released, all of us who have temporarily assembled as family members will confuse our respective destinations. Another example given that is that family members are like straws carried together by the waves of a river. Sometimes such straws mix together in whirlpools and later dispersed again by the same way. They float alone in the water.
Thank you. So what are the points in the opening paragraph?
We are sent here for because of different karmas, and it is just by chance that we join together as make a family. And then we have to go away from each other at the earliest time. Meditation under the action. Everything is being done by three modes of meditation. And we think we are the doers.
Any other points?
Relationships between family members are also very.
Anything else?
I hear only Jesus protected from what is how the time with all particles come together with the waves and then they are separated.
We said that one.
The last section, Angira Muni, he preaches to Prasidhi because he's falling in Rami.
Yeah. Good. Should listen to your wife, Nandabala.
Hare Krishna, please, could you please come in with us? Some dhyana. Yeah. And this is an excellent example of the restaurant. Sounds like a good preacher.
Yeah, he's very expert. Presentator, presenter. Any other points?
About this verse, Sangeeta, I was just wondering if we are the doer of both bad and good activities or just the bad activities?
Everything.
So whatever we do, even good, is carried out by the divine nature, as well as bad.
Yeah, unless you're doing devotional service, that is different. But any material activity is under the influence of the modes of nature. Even devotional service is under the influence of the modes of nature, as Kapiladeva teaches us in the third canto of the Bhagavad Gita. We're not above the modes of nature.
So, in other words, good and bad both are done at this stage by the.
No, they're done by us, but under the influence of the modes of nature.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like that. You can't do something and then you turn around and say, oh, the modes of nature made me do it. Because you did it. But the modes of nature are affecting you, that's all. Anything else?
So, when Hiranyaksha was killed...
Let's speak up for a
second. When Hiranyaksha was killed by the Lord, where was Hiranyaksha killed?
I don't specifically know where he was. Whether or not he was doing austerities at that time, or I'm not sure.
So the after his death, brother's death, then she goes for tapasya.
Yeah, it could be. They may have done tapasya before his brother's death. I think they were periodically going to the
past. The weapon which he received actually for with the intention of killing Lord Vishnu, he got the only after his brother's departure because there are vengeance he does tapasya.
No, I know that. I agree with that. But I think they may have gone and done tapasya also before he was killed as well. I think they did it periodically. So.
I think his brother went to fight with the Burma, the injured warrior.
Yeah, he challenged for.
Yeah, and then he said that, why don't you go and fight with the Vishnu? And so that he went there. So he was in the water and then went to fight with Vishnu.
Yeah, maybe not immediately from leaving Varuna to there, but later on he fought with Vishnu.
Not only in life, but even in death also people come together. Sometimes we find that many people die in one shot. Like in World Trade Center, 2,000 people die in one collapse.
Any other points?
For all the temporary attachment that we have in this period, Prabhupada states here is the fourth day. They float alone in the water. So at the end of the day, at the time of death, the individual soul has to journey alone back to Lord. So we've got to prepare for that.
Scary thought. Hopefully you'll be with me. Make sure you're there.
Soul goes around.
What's that? I know the soul goes around, but at least we should be with each other until the last moment of this.
It's better,
huh? What's that?
Better to be alone.
I don't think I want to be alone. I think I want to be with all of you. I think that would be good. Yes.
There's a nice connection to the translation in the purport. The translation is mentioned that led by his own actions. So Hiranyakashipu is acknowledging that Hiranyaksha departure is the result of his own actions on the translation. But still he is maintaining that vengeful attitude to avenge his death. So he is speaking something by his knowledge, but his intelligence is telling him something else to respond in an adverse way. And Srila Prabhupada also nicely pointing out in the purport, this is the difference between knowledge and intelligence. So he has the knowledge but he is not using his intelligence. So we see in society also many people have some knowledge but they are not using that knowledge. They are not intelligent enough to act on that knowledge for their own. And sometimes as devotees, I personally for myself, I also do that. I have the knowledge that something is not good, but still I may tend to indulge in some activities which are not known. So there is limited reward.
Do you eat chocolate sometimes? Really?
I see.
Really? Any other points? So, as has been pointed out here, and we've read in the Bhagavad Gita, and we've read through the Bhagavad Gita multiple times, that we will be separated from our family members at the time of death. But it is very difficult, even though we know all of this theory, even though we've read the Bhagavad Gita many, many times, even though the Bhagavad Gita is telling us again and again and again these points, but we're still completely attached to our family members. It's very difficult to give up these attachments, to be actually a sannyasi, or to be actually detached from this material world. So, theoretical knowledge is one thing, but applied knowledge, or vijnana, or realization, is a completely different thing. So, what is our situation? Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that for a Vaishnava in Kali Yuga, the Grihastha Ashram is a good situation. It is a safe situation to be within the Grihastha Ashram, to be with wife and children, trying to go forward and developing one's Krishna consciousness. This is a good situation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we should see our family members as servants of Krishna. And this will gradually purify the attachments. Gradually we'll become purified. If we see them as devotees of Krishna, and if everyone assists each other in the family in advancing in Krishna consciousness, then that attachment can purify us, and then gradually we'll overcome our attachment to this material world. But it will take a very long time. Not easy to give up these attachments. And you see, even in our movement, you'll see senior members of our movement, senior Prabhupada disciples, and they're even in their 60s getting married because their wives have passed away or something happened in the marriage, the previous marriage split up, and they're getting remarried again. It's very difficult to give up these material attachments, even though it says that after 50 you should be cultivating a consciousness like a sannyasi. It's very difficult to actually do these things. So, at least we should purify our attachments and we should pray to Krishna very sincerely to overcome our defects and our shortcomings. As Prabhupada said, at least if we can become 70% Krishna conscious. Lord Chaitanya will look over our defects. Because it's very difficult to actually come to this platform. Some devotees can do that, but many devotees will find it difficult to get to that platform. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, then you see your family members as Krishna's servants, you treat them as such, and gradually you'll become purified. Now, here, Hiranyakashipu, he is preaching Dhyan. Same as what Krishna has taught in the Bhagavad Gita. First thing that Krishna says in the Gita when Arjuna surrenders to him, Shishasteham, Sadimam, Twam Prapanam, as soon as he surrenders, first thing Krishna says, Asocham and Asocham Slam. Then from verse 11 to 30, he just preaches Jnana, or transcendental knowledge. So this is the same thing that the Bhagavad Gita is preaching. The Bhagavad Gita is simply an elaboration of the Bhagavad Gita. And Hiranyakashipu is preaching the same Jnana, or transcendental knowledge. Now what is the purpose of Jnana? Why do we cultivate transcendental knowledge? Why so much of the Gita and the Bhagavad Gita speaking about this transcendental knowledge? Because we're meant to be breeding detachment. It breeds detachment. From jnana comes vairagya. So we're meant to be becoming detached, at least slightly detached, or at least somewhat detached. So when we go through the difficulties in life, at least we remain equipoise in Krishna's service. Not that things don't affect us. Many things affect us in this world. A loss of a family member, or difficulties in our marriage, or so many things, they affect us. Because we're human beings, we have these emotions.
But we don't give up our service to Krishna. We remain equipoised. We remain fixed on serving Krishna. Krishna has already said in the Bhagavad Gita, the first thing he says to Arjuna, Arjuna, this is all false. You are not the body, you are the spirit soul. Second thing he says, Matra Spasha Sukunteya, just to teach us right. Be tolerant, just tolerate all these difficulties. Even if we can't fully transcend, even if our minds are still disturbed, but still we tolerate things and we continue in our service. And Krishna sees this. He sees that we are trying, even though it is difficult for us, but we don't stop doing our service. And I've noticed that myself, being through difficulties in the last few years, and even there's been times where I've been unenthusiastic in my service because my mind is disturbed by the difficulties going on in my surroundings. But somehow or other, I just keep trying to do my duty, and then Krishna reciprocates with that. And he helps to lift us up above the modes of material nature and the effect of the mind. So that is what the Hirani Keshavu is preaching to us, detachment. He's saying, be detached. Okay. He's an expert preacher, actually. And his knowledge is very powerful, like that. So we take his teachings, but we don't take his example. And Prabhupada would do this. Just like Prabhupada was sick in 1967, his health failed, he actually had a stroke. And then, one doctor came, they called the doctor, and the doctor came, and when the doctor came, he was drunk. And he came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had a stroke. He was not well. He was very unwell. And the doctor said, I think the old man just needs to go for a walk every day. So Prabhupada said when the doctor left, the doctor was drunk. He was like, he said, I just think he needs to go for a walk every day. He needs to exercise, get out, and like that. So then, when he left, then Prabhupada said Krishna was speaking through him. And then from that time on, he did his morning walk. Every day he would go on his morning walk. Prabhupada established that from that time on. And his health improved dramatically. Prabhupada exercised every day. Like that. So, you can take knowledge even from a dirty place. Chanakya says this. Gold can be taken from a filthy place because gold is valuable. One who knows the value of gold, he will pick that up. Even though it may be in a very unclean place, you say, oh no, that's valuable, take it. Like that. So in this situation, Hirani Kashyapu is speaking. So we can think, oh, Hirani Kashyapu is speaking, we'll just go to the next chapter. And we don't want to hear from that person. No, he's not like that. But no, we take knowledge even from an impure place. Because we understand what he's saying is actually correct. He's preaching very nicely to us. But we don't follow his example. He has some problems.
Lakshman mentioned about give some instructions, then he said Shubha Shubha. Whatever good you're doing immediately.
Yeah, they're powerful. Ravana was a Brahmana. He was very powerful. But he was, we'll see as we go through this section tonight, what is the defect of these demons? Right? Lust overcomes the intelligence. Right? And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, the capital or the sitting place of the lust is the buddhi. And Prabhupada says in the purport in that third chapter of the Gita, he says that the capital of lust is the intelligence. So when the intelligence becomes corrupted by lust, then even someone's very intelligent, but because the lust enters the intelligence, it overcomes the intelligence, then even though someone is very intelligent and very wise and very knowledgeable, he gets carried away. And Ravana was a very good example, because Hirani Kashyapu became Ravana in the next life. Right? So Ravana is a very, very good example because he had 10 heads. And when he kidnapped Sita, right, all the other 9 heads said to the principal head, give her back, otherwise we're going to die. Right? And the principal head said, be quiet. I'm going to keep this woman. And they said, this will be your downfall. Because of your lust, you will die. He said, no, you be quiet. Like that. And he silenced all the other heads. And that one head, he kept going, and then he was killed. Okay. So that is the nature of lust, when it overcomes that consciousness, and this is what Krishna says in the Gita, even though we should not do something, but lust overpowers, and then we are as if by force, Arjuna says, as if we're forced to do it, like that. Just like you know you should not have an extra gulab jamun, but then because of your desire, you cannot stop yourself. For myself, I have no control when it comes to collections. I thought it was very funny. You know, Nityananda Prabhu's appearance day, like we're waiting in the line, going down the stairs, and the devotees are coming out with their plates, walking past. So as they walk past, I just took the gulab and just put it straight in my mouth. And no one protested because they think, oh, he's a senior devotee, so I can't say anything. But I just kept doing it like that. I could not control my lust. I could not control. What's that? I wouldn't say it's completely spiritual. I wouldn't say it's completely material. But I definitely, it's definitely under the influence of, I wouldn't say it's my soul, you know, just desiring Krishna's prasad. I wouldn't say it's on that level. But at least it's Krishna's prasad. Okay. And it's good like that. It's quite funny. I thought it was funny. I don't know if they thought it was funny. So anyway, we have to control our lust. Except for a couple of things. Everyone has their own weakness. One or two things is okay.
Ice cream
is very nice. As long as it's homemade.
Oh.
It has to be homemade, not this stuff from the shops like that. But the homemade one. Ginger root makes very nice mango and condensed milk. She makes like this, you know, amazing one. Homemade one. That one's very nice. But the ones in the shops, you should not be home. If you lost control from those, then you really have a problem. But if you lose control from one which is made by a ginger root, then maybe that's not so good. I remember in 1993, I think it was, we used to have the marathon, Christmas marathon every year. We would go and distribute books from beginning of December. We'd finish on Christmas. And then Christmas Day, we would have a big feast, like an end of marathon feast like that. And she made, there wasn't so many devotees back in those days, so she made all this ice cream, homemade ice cream. And then after the feast, I took 4 litres. I went down the ashram and I ate 4 litres. That's great, 4 litres. I got a whole tub, ate it like in one sitting. Right. So the next day, we had to get on the bus to go to Mwarumba, because we used to have a festival then.
Yeah.
Up at the Mwarumba, like all the yatra. Perth, Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Adelaide, Brisbane, everyone would come to Mwarumba and have a festival. So it took 2 days to get on a bus from here to there. We drive for 2 days to get to Mwarumba. So the first day, I just had to lie on the seat. And I couldn't eat anything. I just lying there because I had 4 litres of ice cream. I couldn't even move. I just lay 12 hours on the bus going to Mwarumba. The second day, I started getting up a little bit and then doing something. So. Okay.
You must be very strong, Prabhupada.
I am very strong. Actually, Prahlada Swami, he read my astrology a few weeks ago when he was here. He said, my problem is overindulgence, because I'm very strong by nature. But when you're strong, then you do too much, or you eat too much, because then you're very powerful. He said, you get just more, more, more. He said, this will cause problems when you get older. So you have to be very careful. You have to be more subtle.
If the body can take that much,
yeah,
at one time,
it will have effect as I get older. It's already having effect like that.
Yeah.
You can do these things, but because we have a material body, you pay for it later on.
Yeah.
When you're 20, it's okay, but when you get to 50 and 60 and 70, then the problem comes. Okay. We'll read the next paragraph. Alright, so read that one. Can you read the second paragraph?
He's not here. Oh, he's not
here.
I thought he was just here.
He was.
Oh, yeah, sorry. What about the Bible? Can you please say that?
Although Hiranyaka was a demon, he had Vedic knowledge and understanding. But he advised Devotee's family members, his sister-in-law, mother and nephews, was quite sound. Demons are considered highly elevated in knowledge, but because they do not use their good intelligence for the service of the Lord, they are called demons. A demigod, however, acts very intelligently to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13 as follows. Adha Pumpir Dvija Kresha Vatmanashrama Vibhagata Svanasthasya Dharmasya Samudhis Hari Doshana. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, dharma, according to caste division of orders of life, is to please the Lord Hari, to become a demigod or to become a poetry. Whatever one's occupation, one must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
What are the points?
The point is that we must do everything for the satisfaction of the Lord, not for our own.
Anything else?
Whatever intelligence we have got, we should use in the service of Krishna.
Anything else?
One man's ashram, which ashram or which varna you are, it really doesn't matter so long as you are able to please Lord Hari.
Highest perfection one can achieve is to please Lord Hari.
Any other point?
So, in this context, with Sri Prabhupada's work, so it's a good message with the Grihasthana Grahmedi. Grahmedi also, he does not match up with the devour of the knowledge and then they are attached to the family for their qualification. So, do they also follow the devotee way for the case?
A demon is an asura.
Yeah, so the Prabhupada is talking about not knowledge, not using the devotee.
Yeah, it depends on the activities. I mean, if you look at the population of the earth now, many people are pious. Prabhupada actually said this. He said there's only a small percentage who are actually demoniac. Right? Most of the people are generally good people. Most people. They're generally good. They're not bad people, but they're ignorant. And because of ignorance, they do negative activities. But most people are fairly pious by nature. I mean, they're fairly good, you know, not really bad. But then Prabhupada said there's a very small percentage who are very bad. They're asuras, and they cause the problems. They mislead everyone else, and they cause the problems. So generally, we will not see that everyone is like an asura. Generally, we see most people are relatively pious. So a Grihamedi is not necessarily an asura, and asura is something quite different.
So is that differentiated with the component of bhakti? Because you know the ones have bhakti, but if you see all myself, Kashyap, what they were doing, bhakti, I mean, especially in the demigods, it's not pure. Unalloyed, like Sri Prabhupada says, unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord. But they have some bhakti to the demigods.
Yeah, they have some. In order for anything to be successful, there has to be a touch of bhakti. But because it's so covered by their asuric mentality or demoniac mentality, everything becomes ruined. So they don't get the benefit. And the benefit is very minimal. Okay. Any other points?
But this verse also shows the difference between the demons and the demigods. And because the intelligence given to both of them. But the demons utilize their intelligence in troubling the demigods mostly. And that's why the Lord punishes them.
Yeah.
because you know, if they have got two or three children in the house and if one is bad, he is troubling the other two. And that's why the parents didn't punish. So it's not that they don't love him. They love him equally, all the three, but they punish him because he is troubling other two. So this is the difference between demigods and demons. Not that Lord is being partial or impartial to anything, but he's just doing the
difference. Yeah.
Okay. In the earlier Bhagavatam verse, which reads the earlier section, it says, Nihai karma dharmaya na viragaya dhapati na tirtha pada sevaya jiva nishama. So if a person, all our knowledge, Vedic knowledge, should actually lead to detachment, and that detachment should eventually lead to attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise the person is dead, even though he is living. I don't know which cancer
it
is. Third cancer. So we can see that Hiranyakashipu has all that knowledge. Of course it's a lila happening, but see, from a tattva point of view, he is having all the knowledge, but it's not leading to attachment to the Supreme. So it's of no use in that sense. Tattva point of view is of no use.
So as Prabhupada is pointing out, that when one has a demoniac spirit, then he will turn his back even on good instruction. So we have to be very careful about this demoniac spirit, because Srila Prabhupada said, and it is stated in the Shastra, that in Kali Yuga the demon and the body are in the same body. Means we have this demoniac spirit within us. So it means sometimes, even though we're devotees, and even though we can be good devotees, but sometimes our demoniac spirit can overcome us, and then we don't listen to our authorities. We don't take good instruction. And that leads to all sorts of problems. So His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami, who is one of my Shiksha Gurus, then he would say that whenever there is a conflict between two individuals, or means ourselves and someone else, it means you always have to look at yourself first. And you have to take it for granted there is always some defect within us. Right? It's never 100% one way. And it becomes very problematic, and it's actually wrong, when we start thinking that everything is just the other person's fault. And when someone takes that attitude, it's the demoniac quality coming out in the consciousness. And it causes big problems in your spiritual life. So for every devotee, whenever we go through a conflict with another devotee, first we must see, what have I done? Now, first look at ourselves first. What have I done? There must be some defect in me. And of course there's some defect in us. And if we take that humble position, then we can reconcile the situation. The nature of devotees, of Majjhimadhikaris, is that they will come together and they will work out any problems which are there. In a civilized manner. Sometimes we see the devotees become very argumentative with each other, and these arguments can scale out of all proportion, and they can go on for a long, long time. And it basically is due to a lack of humility. That means the demoniac quality is coming out. Krishna discusses this in the 16th chapter of the Gita, Divine and Demoniac Natures. He opens the chapter by saying the divine qualities, and then he says the demoniac qualities. And basically the demoniac qualities is that one is very proud and he will not listen to others. We think I know best. That's the problem with the world. When you start thinking like that, that I know best, then it's very difficult for anyone to tell you anything.
The main distinction between divine and demoniac in the Gita is they follow the scriptures, and those people they don't follow the scriptures and act in it. That's the main difference.
Yeah, because they're defying the authority of God. Yes. Like that. So we have to be very careful about this attitude coming up in us, because we should never think of it free from faults. A real devotee or an advanced devotee never thinks he's free from faults. As soon as you think, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, as soon as you think I'm advanced, you've become fallen. Right? And as long as you think you're fallen, It better be good.
I told my husband to tell you later.
You didn't tell me anything. 100% useful. She's doing the right thing and then you're not pushing
it. It was three in my left foot.
Yeah, it's okay. But I need a doctor's certificate though. Sit down. You better have a doctor's certificate, I'll tell you.
You should have said no.
Okay. What was I saying? So, as soon as we think we have become advanced, we are fallen. And as long as we think we are fallen, we have the possibility of making some advancement. So we always have to see if we have defects. Because we have defects. I have plenty of defects. You know, I can't control my senses and the comments and the stuff around. That's a defect. You know, these are faults. You know, and that's just they're probably one of my smallest faults compared to the larger faults. So we always have to have this humble attitude. If we do this, then we can progress and advance in Krishna consciousness. So we should always analyze our motives, because Krishna is always looking, what is your motive? And every time we're in a situation of conflict with another devotee, Krishna is actually arranging that because he wants to test, what is your consciousness? What are you like? How are you responding? How do you think in this circumstance? So we see every circumstance we're in, we see that as a test from Krishna. And he's testing our consciousness. What are we actually like? What is our attitude? Are we making progress in devotional service? Okay. Any points?
Just a question. You mentioned before that if we are doing service, and we continue to do service even though we are lackluster in sort of, you know, we're having problems in our life and all that, but our consciousness is not correct whilst doing that service, how should we react?
What's an example of your consciousness not being correct?
Well, we're always thinking of something that is disturbing our mind. I suppose probably death in the family or something. Not to that extreme, but at least something which is sort of disturbing, and we are doing service at the temple. Our mood should be sort of like in a reverential type of mood, and we are sort of, our mind is somewhere else.
Yeah, the good thing is that at least you're doing the service, you don't give up. Krishna sees that. But if you were more advanced, you would be able to control your mind more and see and be more transcendental and see this is an arrangement of Krishna to test me. Okay. So it means that, you know, it's natural for us to become disturbed when we go through problems in life. That's natural. And Krishna will accept that, but if it just continues and continues and continues and you're not rising above the situation. You know, when I have a problem, then I sit down, well, not sit down, but like, you know, as I'm going through the day, then I'm analyzing it with my intelligence, trying to analyze the difficulty my mind is going through, and somehow bring some balance and some reconciliation, so that it's not just pestering me and I'm not just meditating upon the point constantly. Right? And then try to raise ourselves up a little bit, so we can overcome it a bit. Okay. The spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Being freed from material contamination, he can go anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds. He is fully aware and completely different from the material body. But because of being misled by misuse of his slight independence, he is obliged to accept subtle or gross bodies created by the material energy, and thus be subjected to so-called material happiness and distress. Therefore, no one should lament for the passing of the spirit soul from the body. So, do you want to hear
that? Maybe Ashita very intelligently describes the position of the soul. The soul is never the body, but is always completely different from the body. Being eternal and inexhaustible, the soul has no death. But when the same pure soul desires to enjoy the material world independently, he is placed under the conditions of material nature.
and must therefore accept a certain type of body and suffer the pains and pleasures thereof. This is also described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 13.22. Karanam Sangos, Karanam Guna Sangos, Yatar Sakadhyam Sangos. The living entity is born in different families and conditions of life because of being infected by the modes of material nature. When conditioned by material nature, the living entity must accept a certain type of body which is offered by nature under the protection of the Supreme Lord. Ishwara Sava Bhutanam Radesha Arjuna Krishna. Brahmanyam Sava Bhutani Yantir Nirinagyutani Mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The body is just like a machine, and according to the living entity's karma, he is offered a particular type of machine to move here and there under the control of material nature. This continues until he surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maameva Sakatyate Maya Nitam Tarantite. Until he surrenders, the conditioned soul is carried from life to life by the arrangement of material nature.
What is Prabhupada mentioning here?
Surrender is the most important thing for the soul. Unless we surrender, we cannot get any mercy.
Anything else?
Two comments. Why Hiranyakasipu is such a deep knowledge in from the text? And the point number two is, in the beginning of the chapter we saw he was very angry at the death of his brother. And now he's instructing his relatives about not to lament.
Yeah, if you read this section, it mentions even in the last few verses he's still angry. It says that he's still feeling that emotion. Even in ourselves, sometimes we can see, like, we give classes and we say so many things, and we say Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, but in our own heart and our own mind, we're not actually on that level. So Hiranyakashipu is speaking like that. He's not actually absorbed. He's envious of God. He's angry because of his brother's death. But still, he's preaching nice transcendental knowledge. So I know sometimes I sit down, I give a class, and it sounds very elevated, but I'm not on that platform. Make sense? Any other points?
Then when it comes to knowledge, we have. We are not devoted. We are not surrendered to God. That knowledge is not beneficial.
What?
That knowledge is not beneficial to you. It's not effective.
There's some benefit, is there?
There's some benefit, but it's in the end. You are thinking to Krishna. There's no benefit for him. If you are envious of Krishna and Vishnu, for him there's no benefit.
Prabhupada says that even thinking because he wanted to kill Vishnu, even the intention of killing the, because he's thinking of his form and remembering all the time thinking, still it is affected. That's why it's my general feeling. Even though it is unfavorable, but still, not that we have to feel unfavorably, but there is some benefit.
So, do you think some of these are examples you were giving? Like, we may see something from the Bhagavad Gita, but we might not be at that level. But Hiranyakashipu, but at least we are on the path which is going towards the Lord, but he actually not even in the path. So there is a big difference between what he is seeking but he hasn't realized, but what devotee is seeking but hasn't realized.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between a demon and a devotee. There's definitely a difference.
So we have all the knowledge, but I don't know whether it was in lusty intelligence which was not allowing him to, because he was in the completely opposite direction. Although the knowledge is leading towards this way, he was in the completely opposite direction.
He's talking about misuse of flight, independence, all that. Like, so he himself is acting on the platform.
Yeah. Yeah, he's totally interested. So, the Gita says that we are Kshetragya. Kshetragya means we are the knowers of the body. So we do not experience, as Krishna explains in the Gita and as the Bhagavatam experience, we are not actually experiencing
the pains and pleasures of the material body and the mind. Right? The Bhagavad Gita said in the second canto, actually what we're going through is like a dream. The soul is not directly interacting with the material energy. Right? It is only through the agency of the false ego that we identify with all of this. And we feel this physical difficulty, and we feel this mental suffering, that actually the soul is not actually experiencing it. And that's self-realization. So the example that we saw was Prabhupada. Yeah. The Prabhupada actually transcended the bodily pain that he was going through. He transcended that in his final days. He was actually transcendental to everything he was going through. His kidney failure and all those problems. He was transcendental to it. And even so many disturbances were there, but he didn't lose his enthusiasm in devotional life. So that is the test of the devotees. Even though there are so many difficulties, our minds are so disturbed by the material world, but we don't lose our enthusiasm for our devotional practices. It means we keep chanting our rounds, we keep doing our service, we keep worshipping the deities, we do all the activities we're supposed to do, we keep coming to the Bhakti Vedanta course. We keep doing everything we're supposed to be doing. Because if we're making some advance in the spiritual life, we should not lose our enthusiasm for devotional service. Even though the material world is giving us help. And that's the position of the material world. It doesn't let up. It gets worse. Mahārāja Kṛṣṇamārāja said this not long before he left the world. He said it gets worse. Yeah, just when you think there's one problem, right, then Maya will throw another problem with you on top of that just to make things worse. And when you're down in the ditch, then Maya will kick you further. That's the material energy. That's what she does. Right? When you're suffering, she'll just put more suffering on top of it. Right? But a devotee, he understands that I do not, okay, all this is happening to me externally, and my mind is suffering, and my body is suffering, but I don't stop doing my service to Krishna. And we see that's the position of a very advanced devotee. It's like Swami Krishnamurti used to speak about Vishnu Janaswami, who was on the Radha Damodar bus party. Him and Swami Krishnamurti were running that program in ISKCON, very successful preaching program. And Vishnu Janaswami, he would worship Radha Damodar, Swami Krishnamurti would say. He would get up even when he had fever, and his bodily temperature was raising, but he would get up and do his service each day. He'd still chant his rounds and do everything he was supposed to do, even though he was suffering so much. But he would not stop doing his service for the deities. So that is our test. Because the material energy will always give us problems. Just like Lord Brahma, in the beginning of the universe, he's the first created being. Right? Remember in the second canto of the Bhagavad Gita, it said there was a celestial storm. Right, he was sitting up on top of the lotus flower, and there's a huge storm blowing everything around. Prabhupada says there, this is the nature of the material world, even for a pure devotee. There's always storms. And if you read, just like Ramchal Prabhu, and he wrote one book about the Hare Krishna movement in Britain. What's it called? Yeah, When the Sun Shines or something like that. The amazing book. So you see what Prabhupada was going through. So many difficulties. Right? You know, disciples were not getting along and movement. There's so much of it. If you read the Leelamrita and you study Harisarja Prabhu's diary and read all these books, you see what Prabhupada was going against. Right? And to establish this movement, it was just phenomenal. The opposition he was getting from all sides. But he just stayed completely fixed. He didn't lose his enthusiasm in devotional service. Okay. Because of the movements of the water, the trees on the bank of a river, when reflected on the water, seem to move. Similarly, when the eyes move because of some mental derangement, the land appears to move also. So once again, this is basic Bhagavad Gita philosophy. Mantra spasha sukunteya. Be undisturbed. Titikshaswa. Just tolerate. Whatever comes our way, just tolerate. Krishna gives a nice example in the end of the second chapter of the Gita. He said we should become a korma. Korma means?
Process.
When the material world is battering you, just be a tortoise. Just put your head down and just wait. Sometimes that's all you can do. When the storm is passing, you just put your head down inside your mind and your heart, you just chant, right, and just wait for it all to blow over. Does anyone know Radha Raman Prabhu? Sri Radha Raman Prabhu? Gaurajan Prabhu's disciple lives in Perth. Right? He had a very bad car accident in 1997. 97 or 98, it was one of those years, 97 or 98. Very bad car accident. The car, they were going back to Perth, north of Perth, traveling, and they hit gravel like that, and the car flipped multiple times. There was four devotees in the car, and the car rolled multiple times. And then when the car stopped, it was on its roof, and the other three devotees, they got out, and they were practically unhurt, but Radha Raman was sitting in the front passenger seat and the whole roof had collapsed and he was stuck in the car. And he was stuck there for hours because the helicopter had to fly to get him and release him and then take him to the hospital. And his neck was broken. Right? And the doctor said he would never walk again. He's a paraplegic. Quadriplegic actually. Never walk again. And no use of the arms and limbs and all those things. So he told me, because for months his body was, because when he was stuck in the car like compressed, all of his organs were compressed for several hours, right? He could hardly even breathe because he was so stuck in the car. So for the next few months, he said it was just practically, there's practically nothing he could do. His body was just useless, for a number of months. And while he was in that situation, he just meditated as much as he could on Krishna. And basically, he said he just had to wait for the whole situation to pass. That's all he could do. Because his body was so difficult, his mind was so disturbed by what his body was going through. He couldn't chant his rounds, it was very difficult at that point in time. So when the material energy is dealing with us like this, sometimes we just have to wait. Everything just to pass by, right? And then we'll come out of it again. And now you see Radha Raman Prabhu is doing devotional service very nicely.
There's a benediction for your name. You
bought a big
property. You got the money from the government.
Very nice. Yeah, something nice came out of it. Yeah, he got a lot of money because he made a claim. And he received a lot of money, and then they used that to buy Gopinath Dham. Okay. In the same way, oh my gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movements of the modes of material nature, the living entity, although freed from all the different phases of the subtle and gross bodies, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. In his bewildered state, the living entity, accepting the body and mind to be the self, considers some people to be his kinsmen and others to be outsiders. Because of this misconception, he suffers. Indeed, the accumulation of such concocted material ideas is the cause of suffering and so-called happiness in the material world. The conditioned soul thus situated must take birth in different species and work in various types of consciousness, thus creating new bodies. This continued material life is called samsara. Birth, death, lamentation, foolishness and anxiety are due to such material considerations. Thus we sometimes come to a proper understanding and sometimes fall again to a wrong conception of life. In this regard, an example is given from an old history. This involves a discourse between Yamaraj and the friends of a dead person. Please hear it attentively. So he's very learned now. He's going to quote Shastra to make his points. So he is quoting the Puranas. Purana means old, ancient histories. So all the ancient histories of the universe are recorded within the Puranas. So of all the Puranas, the most perfect Purana, or the perfect Purana, is the Bhagavad Purana, or Srimad Bhagavata. Prabhupada actually said, I was listening the other day, Harry Sarkar was saying, that Prabhupada had a meeting in 1976, I think, with Satsarup Maharaj and Prajumna Prabhu. Prajumna Prabhu was Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, and Satsarup Maharaj was a very good English writer. So Prabhupada actually said, I don't have time to translate everything I want to translate and comment upon. So he said, you two together, you translate Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana. Because these Puranas are ancient histories of what took place in the universe. A Purana is a story, whereas the Upanishads are philosophy. There's no story so much in the Upanishads, like the Isha Upanishad. Right, there's no real story in there, it's just philosophy. The Gita Upanishad, the Bhagavad Gita is also like that. There is no, it is just philosophy, there's no story. But the Puranas are especially for the people in Kali Yuga, they're very beneficial, especially the Bhagavata, because we get the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in the stories. So the Mahabharata is very beneficial for us because it's very interesting. Whenever I tell stories about Mahabharata in class, everyone listens very carefully, everyone loves it. Right? The whole of India stopped when they had Mahabharata. Like that. It'd be good if Hollywood made a Mahabharata one day. The Indian Mahabharata was very... wasn't so... I mean, the story was there, but there should be arrow on the arrow, it kind of goes on the wire across the, not the story. If Hollywood could actually do a Mahabharata, it would be exceptional. They'd make it like an epic, it would be unbelievable. And the Ramayana, the Ramayana, amazing, so purifying to him. And the Bhagavatam, so these ancient histories, we get all the teachings and all the philosophy within the histories, which is very easy for us to palate and hear. It's very interesting. That's why now we're learning so much, but there's a story which is captivating our minds, of the appearance of Nrisimhadeva, right? Of the simple activities of Gaurani Kashyapu, and of the auspicious activities of Prahlad Maharaj. So now, Gaurani Kashyapu is about to narrate a Puranic story.
There's a slight difference between Puran and Itihas.
Yep.
Both are historical, but I think Puran is a scripture which is written not in the lifetime of that event, whereas Itihas is written during the lifetime of that event. So therefore they differentiate slightly. So Ramayana comes under the category of Itihas, whereas Bhagavatam comes under the category of Puran. Because Ramayana was compiled during the lifetime of Lord Rama himself. Whereas here, this is after Lord Krishna departed. There's a small difference.
Yeah.
Slight
In this, there is future of the whole soul holding everything, like these are the words of Buddha and all. That is what we are told, that hasn't happened in this
country. Yes. So this is a Purana.
So how is the narration of things which are happening in the past? How is Purana defined? Because this is something which is telling about...
Yeah, not everything. Part of a Purana must have 10 qualifications to be a Purana. And one of the qualifications, it must reveal things which will happen in the future. That's one of the qualifications. That's why the 12th canto is all predictive. It didn't happen yet. But it's spoken, so this will happen and this will happen and this will happen. In the state known as Ushinara, there was a celebrated king named Suyogya. When the king was killed in battle by his enemies, his kinsmen sat down around the dead body and began to lament the death of their friend. His golden, bejeweled armor smashed, his ornaments and garlands fallen from their places, his hair scattered, and his eyes lusterless. The slain king lay on the battlefield, his entire body smeared with blood, his heart pierced by the arrows of the enemy. When he died, he had wanted to show his prowess, and thus he had bitten his lips, and his teeth remained in that position. His beautiful lotus-like face was now black and covered with dust from the battlefield. His arms, with his sword and other weapons, were cut and broken. When the queens of the king of Ushinara saw their husband lying in that position, they began crying, "O Lord, now that you have been killed, we have also been killed." Repeating these words again and again, they fell down, pounding their breasts at the feet of the dead king. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that the king was destroyed by providence. Providence means fate. Fate means, for a devotee, it means Krishna. Sometimes our lives are carried very powerfully in a particular direction. Sometimes we're just going along in our life and suddenly our life gets picked up and just taken in a completely different direction. Or sometimes in our life we're just going along and then events suddenly just enter into our life. For a devotee, all of this is Krishna. We see all of this as Krishna's arrangement. Krishna is trying to teach us something. So providence for a devotee means Krishna. Nothing happens by chance for a devotee. Everything going on in my life is prearranged. Oh, may God bless you. Okay, so we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki.